This is a special broadcast of U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan's annual address to the Alaska Legislature, produced by 360 North and KTOO in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea. The Alaska House of Representatives and Senate are jointly convened this morning in the Capitol to hear from Senator Sullivan. He's a Republican and Alaska's junior senator in Washington, D.C. His first term began in 2015. The state legislature invites the congressional delegation into the Capitol each year to deliver these addresses. Sullivan is expected to speak for about 45 minutes and to take some questions from state lawmakers. In the House, we can see lawmakers making their way into the chambers. They're not in session right at this moment, but they're getting together. Sullivan is a lawyer and a Marine. He's a former Alaska Attorney General and Natural Resources Commissioner. He also served in President George W. Bush's administration. While we're waiting for Senator Sullivan to make his way to the podium, I'd asked Anchorage Daily News reporter Nathaniel Hurst to help prime us. He covers government and politics for the ADN.
We heard from Senator Murkowski last week, and she is certainly kind of a moderate Republican, whereas Dan Sullivan might be considered a more sort of mainstream Republican, where Don Young might be sort of your crotchety uncle. Maybe Dan Sullivan is more like the more straight-laced stockbroker father. I'm not quite sure if that's the right metaphor, but he's certainly, you know, he's not going to make really provocative comments. I think he would say he's more interested in finding sort of consensus, even if his sort of political positions aren't necessarily a whole lot different from Don Young's when it comes to policy.
And on the House floor, they're taking attendance right now. Bryce Edgman is the House Speaker. Let's listen in on that. Just the House is in session right now, but let's continue listening to Nat while we're waiting.
Will the clerk please tally the board?
I'm really curious just to see what his message is after all that's happened in the last year, and you know, particularly on gun control. He's now following his two colleagues who have articulated, you know, pretty clear positions. He's clearly had a lot of time to think about this, and so to see exactly how he kind of speaks to that issue, or maybe doesn't speak to that issue, I'm super interested in that, and I think it'll be revealing.
And the House is in the process of getting itself into session. Looks like they're doing the invocation right now. Let's tune in.
Dear Lord, thank you that you are attentive to our prayers, and for the grace that you extend to us even when we have done nothing to deserve it. Thank you for the safety on the roads that brought these representatives to come to work this morning. I'm mindful of your watchful care over us. This is a hard year for the legislature and this challenging economy. There are so many important decisions that affect so many people. As Solomon understood the need for wisdom to govern his people, I clearly see the need for God-given wisdom and understanding to be given to each of these representatives. In the book of James, you tell us if anyone lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. Because of that promise, I ask on behalf of each person here that you would give them the wisdom and understanding necessary for them to govern the people of Alaska in a good path. Thank you that I can lift these representatives before you in prayer. In the name of Jesus Christ, I lift this prayer today. Amen. Amen.
Representative Kopp, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Ortiz.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread across the journal.
Hearing no objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Brief at ease.
Once again, this is a live broadcast of U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan's address to the Alaska Legislature. Today is the 42nd day of the 30th Alaska Legislature's second regular session. House is working through some procedural housekeeping in order to invite the Senate in. We can see some pages moving the extra chairs in to accommodate their colleagues from across the hall. Nat Herz, who we heard from earlier, covered Dan Sullivan's campaign in 2014. I asked him how his campaign rhetoric then lines up with his record now.
Like any politician who's running for office, you know, you sort of compare the things they said on the campaign trail and the themes that they hit, and then you look what they do when they're in office, and it just sort of illustrates how you campaign in poetry and govern in prose. I just remember, you know, a couple of Sullivan's campaign things being national debt, national deficit, Obamacare, healthcare being broken. He had like a 5 or 6 point plan to fix the healthcare system. And, you know, lo and behold, some of the big things that happened in the past year were Republicans failed to repeal and replace Obamacare because it turns out that it's actually like really complicated and contentious and nuanced. And then they pass a tax plan that expands the deficit by a pretty substantial amount. And I think he's really enthusiastic about the tax reform plan, both what it will do for individuals and for corporations, and what he says will stimulate economic growth. You know, what he does not talk about is that the projections for economic growth end up not making up for the tax cuts and leaving the U.S. with a much larger deficit and debt. Most informed people, when they watch that campaign, I think probably know enough to sort of understood, like, you know, okay, this is probably easier said than done.
That was Nat Herz, political reporter for the Anchorage Daily News. If you're interested in real-time analysis of this speech and other musings on what happens in the state capitol, hashtag AKLEDGE is very active on Twitter this time of year. That's hashtag AKLEG. Lots of state lawmakers, staffers, reporters, and politicos tweet with that hashtag. And that includes Nat Herz, who we just heard from. He's at NAT_HERZ, and members of the Gavel Alaska team, too, at Gavel Alaska. Senator Sullivan also has a Twitter handle. He's at Sendan Sullivan. That's at SENDANSULLIVAN. We can see state senators making their way into the chambers right now, still standing by, waiting for Senator Dan Sullivan's annual address to the Alaska legislature today. I asked Nat Herz the other day what he thought state lawmakers would like to hear Sullivan address. Here's what he said.
What do they really want to hear from him? Like, I brought $2 billion in a briefcase to balance your budget. But failing that, I think, you know, what are some of like the key federal issues? I mean, I think we heard from Senator Murkowski last week that there have been some really contentious federal issues specific to Alaska that they feel like have been kind of settled, solved successes in the past 6 months to a year, looking at sort of opening ANWR, the Eisenbeck Road. The legislature is facing a lot of uncertainty and anxiety about certainly healthcare costs. So I think anything that Sullivan can tell them about the federal direction on things like Medicaid, healthcare, Affordable Care Act probably will help.
And this is still, we're still on standby waiting for Senator Dan Sullivan for his annual address. We've got the hallway shot on one camera. The Gavel Alaska crew is standing by. See a handful of reporters and pages waiting. Let's cue up some music while we're on standby. Senator Sullivan had made some Alaska headlines recently over a flap with Etsy, the online commerce, e-commerce website. A policy intended to protect against the illegal trade of ivory had prompted an online Etsy to cancel accounts held by Alaska Native artists and who can legally use ivory in their artwork. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan had asked the chief executive officer of Etsy to reconsider its policy to allow Alaska Natives to continue to sell products made from walrus tusks or from petrified woolly mammoth remains found in the nation's most remote state. Session is underway.
In accordance with the provisions of Uniform Rule 51, I turn the gavel over to the President of the Senate, the Honorable Pete Kelly.
Will the joint session come to order? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the Senate be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection, the roll call of the Senate is waived. All members are shown as present. Madam Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call of the House be waived and all members be shown as present.
Without objection, the roll call is waived and all members of the House are shown as present. Mr. Majority Leader. Will Senator Costello and Representative Seaton please escort Senator Sullivan into the chambers, please.
I just throw off Mr. Majority Leader every now and then. It works for me somehow. A sense of comfort.
Senator Sullivan is making his way into House chambers now. We'll hear.
Senator for the great state of Alaska, the Honorable Dan Sullivan.
The voice you heard was Senate Sergeant at Arms Grace Ellsworth announcing Senator Sullivan.
Thank you for that nice introduction, President Kelly, Speaker Edgman, members of the House and Senate from the great state of Alaska. Thank you for inviting me to have the opportunity to speak to all of you again. And thanks also to everything you're doing for our great state and your staffs. It's always great to be back home and see some old friends, new faces, and it's really, really heartening to see healthy faces. On the airplane from Anchorage last night, I saw Senator Shelley Hughes and former Senator Albert Kukash, dear friends to many of us here. They both look strong and they told me they were winning their fights against cancer. And I think Les is too, and that's great news. There's a few people here I'd like to introduce in the gallery today. I think you know many of them. Connie McKenzie, who does great work for me in Southeast. Amanda Coyne is still with me, writing, instead of writing about all of you, which I'm sure you're glad about. Matt Shukaro is my new press secretary. I stole him from Congressman Young, with his permission, of course. Renee Reeve is no stranger to many of you. She is my new state director. Larry Burton is my new chief of staff. Many of you know Larry from his time working with Congressman Young and Senator Stevens. And, of course, the most important person in my life, the love of my life, my wife Julie is here with us, too. So, I'm very proud. Julie always gets the only standing O whenever I give this speech, and she certainly deserves it. I always view my address to the legislature as the most important speech I give all year. I don't have to tell all of you, but being in elected office, we can get caught up in the news of the day, sometimes as a result of an intemperate tweet or two, or three, or four. There's committee hearings, policy papers, and importantly, constituents to hear from and respond to. The days fly by, and I think sometimes it's easy to lose track of the point of it all. What's the big picture? So this speech provides me an opportunity to reflect on Alaska's past, present, and I think most importantly, its future. And what is my feeling, general feeling about the future? I know that many Alaskans are seriously struggling from this extended recession, but I am optimistic. In fact, I'm very optimistic about our future. Now, as some of you know, my team and I, we like to read through the archives to get a sense of what the people who fought for the founding of our state were thinking about back in history. And we can learn from what they were thinking about. In many ways, history can be a compass for us in the future. So I'd like to first take us back to September 10th, 1969, during the first lease sale after Prudhoe Bay was discovered. Hundreds of Alaskans sat in the Sidney Lawrence Theater in Anchorage and gasped as the bids were called up. $900 million. World records during that time. The equivalent of about $6 billion today. And remember, that was in the days when the state budget was about $100 million. Oh, if we were only back then. It was a big time in Alaska. In the 1969 and 70 legislature, the session in Juneau here, over 800 bills were introduced by the House, 600 in the Senate, and a lot got done to set up the Alaska we know today. It was also an important time for Alaska and Washington, D.C. Freshman Senator Ted Stevens was working closely with the Secretary of Interior, our own Wally Hickel, and President Nixon, and they were setting the playing field for future federal legislation, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Act that would be passed in a few years following. Then, like now, there were disagreements, but there was also a buzz of excitement, of possibility that ran between Alaska and Washington, D.C. There was promise and there was optimism. So why do I compare today to the late 1960s? Because I believe so much like today and like then seems right around the corner. There is optimism. There is opportunity if we are wise enough working together to seize it. Then, like now, the stars are aligning for a bright future for Alaska. Now, I know there remains principal debate about policy and how we get to the future envisioned by our predecessors, but I think we can agree on a few key pillars of an optimistic vision for Alaska. So what I'd like to do this morning is to discuss some of these and the progress we've been making towards that future. So first and foremost, We need a federal government that is a partner in opportunity, not an obstacle. We all know this. The feds own over 60% of Alaska lands, and at various points in our history have chosen to use this control as a weapon to stifle our opportunities. Now, I disagree with a number of statements and tweets made by President Trump, but in terms of a federal government that is finally working to help us grow our economy, we are making significant progress. About a year ago, Senator Murkowski and I had an Oval Office meeting with the President and his team, and included the Secretary of Interior, Ryan Zinke, who many of you have met. It was all about Alaska. Well over an hour, we brought maps, charts, PowerPoints on a whole host of issues, you name it, whaling, fishing, NPRA, ANWR, our strategic location, our military. And of course, we did talk about the King Cove Road and how American citizens' lives were regularly in danger because of the lack of a 12-mile road. At one point, the President turned to Secretary Zinke and said, "I want that road done in the next 2 weeks." Well, it took longer than 2 weeks, but when the approval was finally signed by Secretary Zinke, it was a victory for the whole state, but particularly for the people of King Cove and Cold Bay, who never gave up hope. But it's not just the King Cove Road. It's a whole host of issues where the federal government is now supporting Alaska, from Alaska Native allotments for our brave Vietnam veterans to promoting NPRA and ANWR and AKLNG. I watched a State Senate Natural Resources Committee hearing recently where our Attorney General, Jana Lindemuth, testified about the big cases the state was involved with right now regarding the federal government. And it was surreal. So much good news. The chair of this committee, Senator Kathy Geisel, had a smile on her face almost the entire hearing. Senator Bert Stedman talked about hope. Even Senator Click Bishop seemed satisfied. What a difference from my days in front of that committee as Attorney General and DNR Commissioner, testifying about the latest lawsuit we filed and the fights we had with the feds. Trust me, nobody was smiling or hopeful back then. And the feds are listening to us as we continue to place well-qualified Alaskans into the highest levels of the federal government to protect Alaska's interests while implementing national policies. Let me give you some examples. Former DNR Commissioner Joe Balash is now the U.S. Assistant Secretary of Interior in charge of all oil, gas, and mining on federal lands. Chris Oliver is the first Alaskan to permanently head up all federal fisheries for NOAA. Former Alaska State Senate President Drew Pierce is a senior official at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Chris Laddick, our former Commissioner of Commerce here in Juneau, is now the Region 10 EPA Administrator. And Tara Sweeney, the former co-chair of AFN, was nominated by the President to be the U.S. Assistant Secretary of Interior for Indian Affairs, the first Alaskan to hold this important post. So consider this. There are six assistant secretaries in the entire Department of Interior for the United States. Two of them, one-third, will be Alaskans. That is progress. Second, we want a vibrant economy that brings widespread prosperity to all Alaskans. Last year, in this speech, I told you that my number one focus was going to be on our economy and getting us out of this recession. And I think we're making significant progress there with regard to the federal government. In fact, I would argue that we are on the verge of an Alaskan comeback. Now, after this speech last year, I was given a mission, actually by all of you. It was from the Lieutenant Governor and our wonderful speaker here in the form of an Alaska legislature resolution that I was handed after the speech that in essence said, it's time to get ANWR done now. You told us that. And guess what? This year, we all did it. We all did it. Now, it certainly wasn't a slam dunk. There was about a dozen ANWR-related votes that we had over the last several months. We had to get 100%. We had to get each one passed in the Senate and the House. There were many memorable moments in this effort when Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia kept his word to me and voted the ANWR bill out of committee. I realized that we might just have a chance here. And then there was Senator John McCain, an American hero and a mentor who hadn't always been a supporter of ANWR and is fighting cancer himself. When after numerous discussions, he arrived on the Senate floor during one of the key ANWR votes in a wheelchair and turned to me and gave me a big thumbs up, I knew in my gut that we were almost there. And because the vote, we knew it would be close in the Senate on the night of the last vote, the key vote. The Vice President of the United States sat in the presiding officer's chair in his constitutional role as President of the U.S. Senate in case we needed him to break a tie, just as Vice President Spiro Agnew broke the tie in 1973 to pass the Trans-Alaska Pipeline bill in the Senate. So I walked up to the Vice President during this time, and he told me how historic this was, how many times in the House he had voted to open ANWR. And I looked up in the gallery at the many Alaskans who were watching this debate and had literally flown thousands and thousands of miles to watch. And I asked the Vice President for a favor. I said, can you give them a thumbs up, a sign? He looked up, smiled, and gave a huge thumbs up to all the Alaskans who were sitting in the gallery. And they responded with their own fist pumps and waves. And it was exciting. Now, one of these Alaskans in the gallery that night was Matthew Rexford from Kaktovik, which is in ANWR. And in testimony a few weeks earlier before the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, I think Matthew spoke for our whole state when he said the following: the Arctic Inupiat will not become conservation refugees. We do not approve of efforts to turn our homeland into one giant national park, which literally guarantees us a fate with no economy, no jobs, reduced subsistence, and no hope for the future of our people. That was his testimony in front of the United States Congress. Now, Matthew was part of a long line of Alaskans, Democrats and Republicans, literally thousands, who have worked for decades to lay the groundwork for that night's historic vote to open ANWR. And I want to recognize that many of those Alaskans are actually here in this body today. I want to salute you with a round of applause for a job well done. I think it's great. But the Alaska economic comeback is not just about ANWR. Several new discoveries and developments on the North Slope, from fields like Mustang, Greater Moose's Tooth, Nuna, Liberty, Pika, Putu, Willow, and Point Thompson, and progress on the gas line, all point to the potential for billions of dollars of new investment, significant increases in taps, throughput, and state revenue, and hundreds, if not thousands, of good-paying jobs for Alaskans. I believe that we are on the cusp, again, of becoming one of the hottest energy plays in the world. But we need to seize the opportunity now. At the federal level, we are putting policies and, importantly, personnel into place to do this. But it will be largely up to you to bring the investors here. The decisions you make matter immensely. Just as this body's decision to pass Senate Bill 21 resulted in more investment, more oil, and more revenue, even as prices collapse, the policies you'll enact here will dictate whether or not we will seize this moment of opportunity. And of course, it's not just oil and gas that drives our economy. Our state has the most sustainable, abundant fisheries of any place on the planet, supporting tens of thousands of jobs in our state. As the chairman of the state subcommittee in charge of our nation's fisheries, I'm working to make sure that Alaska remains the superpower of seafood by increasing market opportunities for our world-class products, streamlining federal regulations that offer and encumber family businesses, family-owned vessels, as well as the activities of our sport and subsistence fishermen. Third, we want to live in healthy communities with clean air and clean water. A strong economy is worth nothing if it destroys our environment. We are all committed to protecting our state's environment and preserving its natural beauty. To that end, this legislature has enacted some of the most rigorous environmental standards of any place in the world. But we don't always have control of what washes up on our shores. Every year, millions of tons of waste enter the ocean, mostly through Asia. This pollution, most of it plastics, ends up on our shores or breaks down into tiny pieces that can enter the marine food chain and harm fish and wildlife. And Alaska bears the brunt of this crisis because of our extensive shorelines and our unique reliance on oceans and rivers. Last year, I authored legislation with Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse to tackle this crisis called the Save Our Seas Act. The bill boosts the federal government's domestic and international response to ocean waste and empowers NOAA to declare severe marine debris emergencies and authorizes additional fundings to states like Alaska for cleanup and response efforts. It also directs the State Department to undertake negotiations with other countries to address this challenge internationally. Our bill passed the Senate already, and we're working to ensure it passes the House. And we're also making progress on another important oceans issue, particularly here in Southeast, and that's the transboundary mining issue. A few weeks ago, Lieutenant Governor Malott and I traveled to Canada to meet with cabinet officials to request specific action by the government of Canada on this issue. Now, I must admit, we are a bit of an odd couple, a Tlingit Democratic Lieutenant Governor and a white Republican U.S. Senator. I think we confused the Canadians even more when we began most of our meetings by mentioning that we were actually related. It's true, our wives, Julie and Tony, are cousins. But our trip to Ottawa showed the Canadian government a powerful unity, which now includes the U.S. State Department, whose officials are taking transboundary mining issues much more seriously than the previous administration ever did. Healthy communities also means access to affordable health care, a huge, huge challenge in our state. There are principal differences and much debate on this issue, but even here, we've made progress in the past year. Thanks to your innovative legislation from this body, the Trump administration granted Alaska the first 1332 waiver of any state in America. This helped decrease premiums in the individual market for the first time in recent memory and will bring approximately $320 million of federal support back to the state for our individual market. The U.S. Congress recently has acted on health care legislation. We reauthorized CHIP, the block grant program, which covers Alaskan kids and low-income families for 10 years, and we fully funded community health centers, which play such a critical role throughout our state. We delayed the Affordable Care Act's Cadillac tax, which, it ever kicks in, will devastate Alaska's fragile health market. And we repealed the ACA's individual mandate, which taxed Alaskans for not buying a product they couldn't afford. Think about that. For not buying a product they couldn't afford. Not only was this an affront to individual liberty, it was a regressive tax that hit middle class and working-class families the hardest. Close to 70% of the Alaskans who had to pay this penalty made $50,000 or less. With the individual mandate gone, Obamacare is now truly voluntary. Now, I recognize that healthcare costs are strangling most Alaskans, and the state's share of Medicaid costs are impacting a growing portion of the state's budget. I took note when Senator Peter Michikee said during a recent hearing that we are close to being swallowed by the costs of healthcare. I know that all of you in the legislature are working hard on this issue, on ways to bring down costs and keep them under control. And so are we. We came close last year to making the federal formula for Alaska's Medicaid match much more equitable, which would have saved the state hundreds of millions of dollars. And you have my commitment to continue to work with all of you on these vital issues. Fourth, we want to be safe in our homes, villages, neighborhoods, and schools. And I think we obviously have a lot of work to do in this area. I hear from Alaskans over and over again about cars stolen, about houses broken into, shootings on our streets. In certain communities, it's something that resembles almost mayhem. We have to do everything we can to protect our citizens. This also means making sure our kids are safe in their schools. The horrific high school shooting in Florida has scarred the conscience of our nation and catalyzed an important national discussion on school safety. Regardless of where we stand on these issues, young Americans across the country who are speaking out, some of whom are friends and families of the victims, deserve to be listened to. I will carefully evaluate proposals on the federal level. However, as Alaskans, we understand how important our Second Amendment rights are. We use firearms not only for self-defense, but as a tool to feed our families. And in many ways, we are unique from almost every other state in the nation on this issue. We also have to get to the root cause of the crime wave sweeping many Alaskan communities. The opioid epidemic and gangs related to the drug trade are certainly fueling this. As some of you know, I've been very focused on all aspects of the opioid crisis. 2 years ago, we hosted a wellness summit at the Matsu College, where hundreds of Alaskans gathered to listen and learn and exchange ideas from each other and gain inspiration. It wasn't just a talk fest. For those who were there, a lot of action-oriented ideas involving federal legislation and funding came out of that and became a reality. We are building that. We are building on that. The recent 2-year federal budget deal dedicates $6 billion to addressing the opioid crisis for states. And I'm working on an update to the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, the CARA Act of 2016, with some of my Senate colleagues. But more needs to be done, and I know Alaskans have ideas. So we are planning another wellness summit this summer, this time not just focused on our addiction epidemic, but on combating the crime wave that is victimizing so many Alaskans. Stay tuned. We will need your help. We will need your input for good ideas that we can act on. Now, being safe also means combating sexual assault and domestic violence, which many of us in this chamber have been working on together for years. The Choose Respect initiative was one of the most comprehensive statewide initiatives in the country that set out to tackle this very difficult issue. I brought many ideas from Choose Respect to the U.S. Senate, including a bill called the Power Act, which recently passed the Senate and would provide increased legal services to survivors of domestic assault, domestic violence, and sexual assault. There's so much more to do. Just like addiction, the scars from these crimes can pass down through the generations. We've known for a long time that Alaska has a big problem in this area. What happened this year is that in the rest of the country, from Hollywood to Washington, D.C., to the New York media establishment, the rest of the country woke up to the fact that they too have a problem, a big problem. I commend the brave women who have come forward with their stories, including in Alaska. They are changing Alaska and the world for the better, and we need to support them. Fifth, we need to be the front line of freedom and defense for America. Given our location and our large veteran population, Alaska is destined to play this critical role. I like to say that our state constitutes three pillars of America's military might. We are the cornerstone of our nation's missile defense. We are the hub of air combat power for the Asia Pacific and the Arctic. And we are a platform for expeditionary forces for some of the best trained American troops to leave from our state to hot spots in the world. I was with some of these troops in Afghanistan over the holidays. Alaska's very own 4th Brigade of the 25th Infantry Division, what we call the 425. 2 years ago, this 5,000-member airborne unit was on the verge of being eliminated by the Obama administration. We reversed this misguided policy, and now our very own 425 is forward deployed, defending our freedoms. And we're building on these pillars of the military in Alaska. Using my seat on the Armed Services Committee and Senator Murkowski's position on the Appropriations Committee, in the past 3 years, we've secured over $1 billion for military construction in our state, including $200 million to build a new missile field at Fort Greely as part of a broader missile defense bill I authored last year. These military investments are not only critical for America's national security, they have the added benefit of bringing very good jobs to our state. And the front line of freedom in Alaska also includes some unsung heroes who don't get the attention they deserve. And that's the men and women of the United States Coast Guard. The Coast Guard is undergoing a major recapitalization effort right now. As chairman of the subcommittee in charge of the Coast Guard, I've been working with the Coast Guard's leadership to include that this recapitalization will mean more ships, more aircraft, and more personnel throughout our great state. And finally, we want to be the land of the future, where opportunities are unleashed for our families and children that we can't begin to fathom today. We are blessed with so many unique advantages relative to other places in the world. You know them, but sometimes it's important to talk about them. Our vast natural resources, including boundless renewable energy, huge deposits of metals and minerals, more shoreline than all other states combined, the most strategic location from which to take advantage of the Asia-Pacific economic renaissance, Alaska Native corporations, which drive our economy, and one of the world's largest sovereign wealth funds. We have a great diversity of people and cultures. We have a geography and climate worthy of study by the finest scientific minds. We have the promise of a new Arctic frontier. We have a midnight sun in the summer, and in the winter, electrical charged particles dance in our skies. Who else has that? We can ski to our offices on world-class cross-country ski trails that produce Olympic gold medalists like Keegan Randall. I knew Keegan Randall would almost get as large of an applause line as my wife, Julie. And on the weekends, adventure beckons. We climb mountains, snow machine, choked rivers, pick berries on our tundra, and hunt to put food on the table. Alaska has always been a place that celebrates big ideas and big thinkers with a unique combination of frontier and entrepreneurial spirit. Let's never lose that. Cynicism can dampen and extinguish that unique Alaska fire. Whatever we do or don't do, Let's not let that happen to us. So what are we doing in D.C. to keep that Alaska fire burning? Well, most recently, we passed historic tax legislation. Middle-class Alaskans will see hundreds of dollars more in take-home pay each month, which will... And this will help our families offset permanent fund dividend cuts. Thousands of Alaskans are also receiving bonuses and increased benefits from companies doing business here because of the tax reform bill. This is real money that will help stretch family budgets during these lean times. The new tax bill also helps our families by incentivizing paid parental leave. Our small businesses will also see reduced tax burdens and will be given the incentive to reinvest their extra money here to help us get out of this recession. As for science, we have so much potential to be a vibrant hub of research, but the federal government can be a much better partner. One example, I'm a huge supporter of NOAA. I chair the committee in charge of NOAA. Yet so much of NOAA staffing, research, and infrastructure for Alaska-based missions are not located in Alaska. I have a commitment from the incoming NOAA administrator to help us fix this. Bringing those NOAA research and personnel to Alaska while ensuring a strong university system throughout our state will help provide a new generation of scientific opportunities for our children. We should always remember that entrepreneurs can live anywhere in the country to start new businesses, to start new ventures. Our unique attributes can attract and keep some of the most adventurous, creative people in the world. We must ensure that our policies, whether state or federal, welcome those who come north to the future. Our great land greets them with open arms, and we must too. With opportunities in telecoms, and server farms, and data centers, and carbon fiber, in our fertile soils, and aviation and logistics, and opportunities provided by our cold climate, in tourism, in our unique native arts and crafts, and in our enormous alternative energy potential. What I've tried to do this morning is lay out a vision of what a bright future for Alaska should and could look like. I would, of course, love to hear opportunities that you are seeing across our state. One thing, though, I know, and I think you know too, is there is no limit to what we can achieve when we nurture and cultivate our big ideas and our Alaska frontier spirit. So shortly after the Prudhoe Bay lease in 1969, a Washington Post reporter wrote about what Alaska's newfound riches might mean for the future of our state. He interviewed tough, independent homesteaders, miners, trappers, fishermen, and women, he wrote, who could, quote, change a flat tire on a one-ton truck in a blizzard. There was a tremendous excitement in our state, but also anxiety with what our newfound riches might bring. Alaska might end up being like so many places in the lower 48, wrung out, dull, overcrowded, polluted. We knew then, like we know today, that our future ideal had to be more than just about having money. It was also a purpose, a sense of creating a place where both freedom of spirit, adventure, and community are interwoven. So what's happened since 1969 in that lease sale? Well, I think we've done a pretty darn good job of creating a unique place that we love and is full of opportunity. There are setbacks, of course, but working together, Alaskans have built the best, most unique state in America. We still have homesteaders and miners and trappers. We still have women who can change a flat tire on a one-ton truck in a blizzard. I bet there's even a few in this room. And I know that we have serious challenges, but you have my commitment to work through those challenges together and at the same time bring the spirit of excitement and creation back to our state. I believe that we have a unique opportunity in maybe only a short period of time to once again set the course to realize Alaska's promising future. The moment is now. We must seize it together. Thank you. God bless the great state of Alaska.
That was Senator Dan Sullivan delivering his annual address to the Alaska Legislature. This is live special coverage through Gavel, Alaska.
Senator, we have about three questions if you want to answer them.
Sure.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you so much, Mr. Senator, for pushing forward on the opioid issue. Your colleague, the junior senator from New York, recently called out Big Pharma for opposing legal marijuana because it cuts into their profits. Medical marijuana has been shown to steer people away from addictive opioids for solutions to chronic pain and without killing them through overdoses. I hope you will be open-minded on this issue, Senator, because in the meantime, legalized marijuana has boomed in Alaska, providing jobs for thousands of Alaskans, growing, harvesting, processing, and generating millions in state revenue. One of our only sources of new revenue, I have to remark.
This is Representative Harriet Drummond,
Alaskans and this new industry,
legislator, a Democratic legislator from Anchorage.
On its hostile stance towards states who've legalized marijuana.
Thank you. It's a great question. And, you know, at the beginning of that question, when you talked about the opioid crisis, you know, I think it's important for all of you to know there's a very strong bipartisan focus on this back in Washington. And as we talked about this, for those of you who are at the Wellness Summit and the Matsu College a couple years ago, you know, this has the potential to devastate entire communities. Indeed, it is. It is in many parts of the country. And we can't allow that to happen here, although it's a huge challenge. Look, on the medical marijuana issue, I think I was, when I ran for office in 2014, that's when the statewide initiative was on the ballot. I was asked about it during that time. I said I wasn't supportive, but it passed. As a matter of fact, it passed overwhelmingly in Alaska. So I'm a big believer in the 10th Amendment and what states focus on. So back in Washington, I've been very focused with Senator Murkowski, Congressman Young, on allowing the federal government to work with the states who have legalized marijuana to do it the right way. You know, during the Obama administration, there was this thing called the Cole Memo. And Attorney General, and that kind of said, hey, we won't come after you. If you actually read the memo, kind of said, we won't come after you, but. So in my view, even the Cole Memo was not that strong enough to kind of help people here have certainty. And that's what I think is needed. So the key issue from my perspective is trying to move legislation. And there's a whole host of different approaches to this. Some of which, as you mentioned, is only focused on medical marijuana. And so I have been working with some of my colleagues. It's an interesting group of senators because it's very bipartisan. It actually is kind of from states like ours who have actually legalized marijuana through statewide referendums. But to me, that's really the ultimate answer because and it's going to take time. There's no doubt about it. Because if you have this kind of back and forth between administrations on federal regs, like you're seeing now, it doesn't provide certainty. So I think the key way to do this is to try, particularly within the Senate, to get 60 votes on something that would provide certainty. And we're working on that. There's a lot of legislation out there. And again, we would welcome your ideas. I've had a number of discussions with a lot of you on this issue. But I think that is going to have to need legislation versus the back and forth of what you're seeing right now with different federal administrations having different views, and then it brings a lot of uncertainty.
Senator Coghill, and then last question, Senator Bishop after that.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Senator, for your service. You and your family have served us well, both in the military and here in the U.S. Senate. So you got my deepest gratitude. Also, your staff has been very accessible and has worked with us on many issues dealing with federal-state issues. We're grateful for that. But in the interior, one of the things we're very, very grateful for is you've worked with us in our military world. The F-35s is a big success for us, and thank you for working us with us on that. And for the families that have had the benefit of your advocacy in their benefit issues, so thank you for that. But you were just, we are a geographic state, as you said. We get this wonderful geography that is at the top of the world. We get to look at what the rest of the top of the world is doing.
Yeah.
And we have eyes and ears, but also we have missiles. And you went to Asia just recently. You're out there snooping around. It'd be kind of interesting to hear what you see. You went to Greeley. You got to see what's going on both in the construction and the readiness. And our own state military, our Guard, you get to pat them on the back. We're grateful for that. It's a big deal that we get to be a responsible party for the rest of America. It'd be good for you to tell us where we sit in that, both from your perspective on the military committee, but with the rest of Congress, and then from your perspective of Asia. It would be nice to hear your perspective on that.
Great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator. And really appreciate that. And look, and this is another area where obviously we have really strong bipartisan support in the Congress, but here, of course, supporting our military and what we're doing. You know, I never tire of talking about it and talking to my colleagues about it. You mentioned Senator Coghill. I just got back from a CODEL that was led by Senator Jim Inhofe. So he's right now, as I mentioned, Senator McCain is really struggling with cancer, which we're all, you know, all praying for him. So right now, Senator Inhofe is the chairman of the Armed Services Committee. And he, Senator Ernst from Iowa, Senator Rounds from South Dakota, Congressman from Mississippi, we are on a CODEL to Asia, Korea, Japan, Taiwan. And then, you know, I said, look, as part of that CODEL, we need to end up here. You guys need to see us, right? We're the Asia Pacific. And so we're here the last day and a half. And it was pretty interesting, right? We left from Tokyo, and you know, we got here in almost 6 hours. And I think that surprised them. Like, wow, you really are part of the Asia Pacific. And I think sometimes it's really important to get people on the ground here. And as you mentioned, we went to Fort Greeley yesterday. And look, right now, in terms of what's going on with North Korea, there's a lot of threats, particularly with the dictator there who's, you know, he's going to likely have the capacity to hit not only Alaska, but the lower 48 with an intercontinental ballistic nuclear missile. It should be concerning to everybody. But what we've done is we have worked, and I mentioned it, I had a bill last year that massively built up our missile defense. And we're the cornerstone of that missile defense. And the good news is, and we worked hard on this, we tried really hard to make that a bipartisan bill. Missile defense, for whatever reason, I won't go into the history, has usually been a partisan issue, starting with Reagan, Star Wars, and all that. It's been kind of Republicans for it, Democrats against it. The big kind of breakthrough, I thought, was my bill had very strong bipartisan support, Democrats and Republicans. And we got it passed as part of the broader defense authorization bill and funded, fully funded. So it's a new field at Fort Greeley, but we are the cornerstone of the country's missile defense. I mean, that field protects not just Alaska. That field protects Miami, New York, Chicago, L.A., pretty much everybody. And what's really, really amazing, and I, you know, take a lot of pride in it, all of you do, I know too, that's run by an Alaska National Guard unit. The 49th Missile Defense Battalion, that literally 24/7, you go down there Christmas Day, you got people working it. They're doing it. They have this great motto, kind of modern day Spartans, the 300 protecting the 300 million, which I kind of love. But we went there yesterday, and had the full tour. And it's very impressive. But to have the chairman, the acting chairman of the Armed Services Committee, and some of my colleagues on the Armed Services Committee come here and go, whoa, whoa, look what Alaska does for us. It's an important part of my job. But I want to thank all of you, because I know everybody here is supportive of that. Look, we have very significant challenges. From an international perspective, the rise of China is concerning a lot of people. But we had meetings with the leadership in these countries over the last 4 or 5 days. And, you know, they're relying on us. And I would say our alliances are strong in those regions. They're really strong, actually. But what we bring to the defense of our nation, whether it's, as you mentioned, the missile defense, whether it's, I talk about the hub of air combat power. I don't want to get too, like, weedy here, but, you know, with the F-35s coming to Eielson, Alaska's going to have, with our F-22s and F-35s, those are called fifth-generation fighters. What is that? They're supersonic and they're stealth. We're going to have over 100 in our state. There's no place on the planet Earth that has anything close to that. So we were, you know, showing that to our colleagues, but that's going to be more and more important for the defense of the nation. And it's all right here. And that's why I listed it as one of the things that is a vision, because we take pride in it. I don't think it's a partisan issue. But let's face it, it's also good for our economy. You know, $1 billion of military construction. Last Christmas, I had a meeting with the head of the Corps of Engineers, and they want to make sure, and we were pressing them on it, that the vast, vast, vast majority of that military construction goes to our people. Our workers, our companies, our unions, our contractors. And I said, look, this isn't some kind of giveaway to Alaska. This is good use of the taxpayer money, because when you're building a new missile field at Fort Greeley and it's 40 below zero, and you bring up a company from Georgia, they have no idea what they're doing. But we do, all right? Our people do. So we're making a lot of progress on it. I appreciate the question. And in it's all over the state, but in the interior in particular, it's really important. So thank you for all the great support you're giving to our troops, because they're doing a great job.
Last question, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Sullivan, in your recent trip to Asia, did you have any energy discussions with any of the...
Yes.
And could you expound on that if you're at liberty?
Sure.
You can. And lastly, thank you for 1002 and the whole delegation. But we've all worked over 40 years to get in there. Any suggestions on how to take advantage of this opportunity?
Well, thanks, Click. And most of the meetings were focused on national security issues, but I believe in Asia. But I believe the national security issues are very interlinked to the energy security issues. And right now, Secretary Zinke, the Secretary of Interior, likes to talk about this new role for America, not only American energy independence, but American energy dominance. And this is our Secretary of Interior, talks about how, but that has to go through Alaska. We have to be a key part of that. That's why I think there's so much opportunity. So I raise this pretty much in almost every meeting. We met with, presidents and foreign ministers and defense ministers about the security of their country in deepening energy security between America and their country is a key part of that. I talked about Alaska natural gas, of course. And I talked about, look, America is now once again becoming the world's energy superpower. We're the largest producer of natural gas in the world, bigger than Russia. We're on the verge of becoming the largest producer of oil in the world, bigger than Saudi Arabia. We're now able to export that to our allies. We're the largest producer of renewables in the world. Harder to export, but you can get technology and stuff for wind turbines to some of these. And natural gas, of course, is very much helps with regard to greenhouse gas emissions and lowering those. So we had discussions on that in pretty much every area. They're excited, but some of these places are, we have work to do here. But I think they see it beyond just economics and energy security, but actually national security. I mean, more being closer aligned with us America, Alaska, on energy helps these countries. There's no doubt about it. And so, again, I think we have this moment of opportunity to seize this because the feds right now are pushing it. I mean, you have this administration and the federal government pushing it in China and in these other countries. So, yes, we had good discussions on that. Second, look, with regard to the 1002 area in Anwar, like I said, this is a team effort, right? 40-year team effort. And we were, and, you know, you guys passed that legislation, that resolution last year. That helps us, really helps us to be able to say, hey, back in my state, this is a bipartisan issue, right? By the way, the votes were bipartisan. You don't read about that in the press much. I mentioned Senator Manchin. I think there's enormous opportunities, but we got to get on it. I mean, guess who's in charge of implementing that legislation right now? Joe Balash. Okay, I mean, we have this moment. We got to grab it. And so I think I saw the governor had proposed some legislation on the seismic issue. You know, I don't want to jump into your business here, but I think those kind of things showing that we're open. You know, there's some of the press, which is, trust me, the national press on this is just universally hostile to this issue because they don't get it. They don't understand it. Now they're starting to write, oh, no energy company's interested. That's not true. It's not true. But they're interested. They don't tell everybody, right? You guys know how these people operate. But we need to encourage that. And I think if the legislature can do things to encourage seizing that moment, opportunity right now, on something that we've been working on for over 40 years on a bipartisan manner, it's something we should be seizing. So thanks. And thanks again to all of you guys on that issue. This was the huge work of thousands, bipartisan. It was very special, and you guys did it, so it was great.
Thank you, Senator Sullivan.
From the state capitol in Juneau. Let's make his way to the chambers now. On 360 North Television, stick with us for regular Gavel Alaska coverage of Senator Sullivan's press availability.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President.
This special coverage was produced by 360 North and KTOO in Juneau. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for joining us. Now back to regular programming on your public radio station.